It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Mr. Sal Capaccio joining us on the Western Hotline to recap Bills practice and also get into this conversation we're having about, you know, offense and defense and the evolution of the game, something I think Sal is always excited to talk about. Good morning, Sal.
Good morning. Yeah, for sure. About it. How are you?
Good. Good. Ready for a game, finally. I mean, it's been a week since the Bills played. I was talking with friends yesterday, and the mini-bye slash extended layoff right after having two games in 4 days is kind of jarring, you know? Like, we're just waiting forever for this next game to come.
Yeah, and look, I think there's advantages and disadvantages, right? You know, obviously, the disadvantage right away, that turnaround after the first game, you get back after it, you know, health-wise, things like that. Now the advantage is you get a little rest. But the other advantage here is I think at least the Bills have a little bit of a time period to adjust to some of the injuries and figure out a plan, right? You know, you have no Terrell Bernard. You haven't had Taron Johnson for a game in, you know, almost two full games. And they can kind of take a step back, figure out exactly how they want to formulate the roster and the game plan. It's not like, you know, I think what happened was the first week when Taron Johnson goes out, guys, you put, you know, Cam has to go to nickel and Jamarcus Ingram has to play dime safety, which isn't his normal spot. But you really, even if you don't want to do that the next game, which he was fine, obviously he was fine. He had a great game the next game, but you had 4 days. You couldn't really do much different. You know what I mean? This is a different situation. Now, if you want to come up with a package to mitigate losing some of the guys, at least you have a little time to step back and do that.
Yeah. So the latest, let's get the injury report as we prepare for this. So what are we watching and how's it look right now? Dewan Smoot looks like he might be closer to a Bills debut.
Yeah, and he said the plan is right now for him to play. That's what he told us. So, you know, we're looking at him as a guy that's going to make his Bills debut against his former team. You know, he played 7 years in Jacksonville. He had a nice career there. The Jags, you know, he left in free agency. He put up some nice numbers. But I think that this would be also beneficial for the Bills' pass rush, which, good as it's been, guys, which has been good, to get a guy who really can play inside, can play outside. They really had, I think, a lot of plans with this year, but they weren't able to use them the first 2 weeks. They elevated Cameron Klein in week one and Kingsley Jonathan in week two. You know, you have him available. You won't have to elevate anyone. And Javon Solomon, by the way. That's the other guy. I'm talking about Bills' debuts. Now, he's a rookie. I don't know if Javon, to me, I look at the roster and go, I don't know if Javon Solomon would get a jersey anyway. This might be a one-for-one swap where instead of having an elevation, you just have Dewan Smoot active. And then maybe Javon Solomon isn't. However, Casey Tuhill's been a little bit banged up. He did practice yesterday. It's just funny that all these defensive ends are banged up, but if they're getting healthier now. It feels like they're going to be healthy at that position. As good as they've been, they'll get even stronger. They'll get even deeper. They'll get even healthier. And then we know for sure Terrell Bernard and Taron Johnson are not going to play. Sean McDermott has already ruled them out.
This is the Barnes Firm Injury Report brought to you by the Barnes Firm. Car crash, for help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. On those two, Sal, Bernard and Johnson, you know, we've seen the Bills defense do pretty well without the two of them on a, you know, not a full season or anything like that. You'd like to get them back as soon as possible. I wonder if a little bit extra time, does it work both ways where Sean McDermott and his staff get more opportunity to see how they might want to change things up? But also Jacksonville might know, all right, hey, a couple players we think are pretty good. Maybe we can go after some of the replacements, whether that's a young player or somebody in a new spot. That's Dorian Williams, whoever it might be, linebacker, you know, the Bale Inspector spot. Like, it seems to me that it could be a spot you look to expose if you are the opposition.
Yeah, that's the biggest concern for me this week, would be more than anything coverage from the linebacker area. You know, it's one thing to lose Matt Milano and you go to Dorian Williams. We know that Dorian Williams is not a cover linebacker like Matt Milano is. Dorian Williams is a guy that's just going to see the ball, go get the ball. He's going to bring a lot to it, and he's going to make tackles. You know, but when it comes time to playing in space, covering, watching what's going on, zone, that's where he can, you know, he's still learning. I think the same thing can be said for Bale Inspector. Now you put them both together. If I'm the Jacksonville Jaguars, I'm looking to attack the coverage of the Buffalo Bills linebackers. That's why I think on the other side of things, we don't know the situation with Evan Engram, guys.
Yeah.
I think Evan Engram is a really big player here this week for the Jags, if he can play. If not, I know they had a replacement that played okay, but he's not Evan Engram. But I think that's an area. And then Travis Etienne, really, you know, he scares me a little bit here in this particular role. But again, I think the Bills understand this, right? You have to think about at the second level for the Bills. Just think about this for a second. You lose Taron Johnson, Matt Milano, and Terrell Bernard, and you replace them with Cam Lewis, Dorian Williams, and Baylen Spector. All of them can do a lot of great things in their own right, but man, that is a big, big change as far as coverage from that particular level.
Yeah, and this kind of even relates to what we were just talking about, Sal, and we have been for days. The way defenses are playing and the way the Bills play opposing offenses, not allowing the big play. The Jaguars, like, Engram is their guy for easy button throws, middle of the field, intermediate, because you look at their receiving core, and especially on the outside, like Gabe Davis and Brian Thompson Jr., I feel like both of them, it's down the field type of plays. Kirk can do a little more of everything, but man, if Engram can't play, and I don't know how far of an update we have on him right now, I know there hasn't been an injury report, but if he can't play, I feel like that easy stuff and the way that the stuff that the Bills will kind of let you take, if you will, they're kind of missing their best guy for that.
Yeah, I think so too, but I think Etienne's obviously very good out of the backfield, right? I mean, remember when he came in the league, weren't they working at wide receiver initially, right? You know, he's a guy I think that they would look for that as well. And I think Trevor Lawrence is a smart quarterback. He'll understand it now. Obviously, they're playing on the road. Hostile environment might make it a little more challenging. But yeah, Evan Engram would be a big loss for them. We don't have an update on him right now. I don't think that they did anything yesterday to get any indication, but today would be the first actual injury report of the week for both teams. We kind of know where the Bills stand after everything we just said, but I think then now we'll get a look at what the Jags have going on. So to me, that's a big key to this game. But you know, I mean, other than that, and you know, those guys, Baylen Spector, he's a tackling machine at middle linebacker. When he knows where the ball is, he can go get it. And it's not like he can't, you know, has no ability to cover. But when you are, you know, when you don't get as many reps because you've been playing behind people and you haven't been in the system, and you know, you're not out there always doing it, it takes a little adjustment. It takes a little bit of time. So that's why I think that, you know, the Bills, they'll have a plan. They'll have a plan to come up with, the, you know, third downs and things like that. But those guys are going to have to do a good job in that area too. On first and second down, the Jags, you know, do throw the ball there. They're going to have to figure it out.
I do wonder, Sal, too, like, especially with two backup linebackers now. Like, I wonder, we haven't seen what this would look like if Bernard and Milano were both healthy, but doesn't matter. Like, that probably won't happen, if it even does, till the end of the season. The Bills using more and more dime with both Cam Lewis and Jamarcus Engram out there on the field, it feels like they've landed in a spot now through two games, right, where the trust to put that package out there is there, right? Because now Lewis's versatility and Ingram's ability to play, I don't know, I just feel like, especially in these passing situations, if the Bills can get ahead, you're going to see them use more of that than ever for the next month or two.
Yeah, you might. I agree with that. And, you know, the reason why you can also afford to play dime is because what happens is you take a defensive tackle off the field generally. That's the guy coming off the field. You can keep your two linebackers on. You can take a linebacker off. You can do that way if you want. But if you can do that, if the Bills feel that they can get an interior pass rush and they can still get home and have three guys rush a little bit, you know, how they want to do that, they can have a linebacker blitz. There's different ways they can go about it and do it as well. If they want to take one of the linebackers off, replace him with, you know, a safety, that's, you have options there. This goes back to, I think the Bills have built this roster where they have this flexibility. They feel that they can do a lot of different things on defense and, you know, have a package ready, something ready to combat whatever the other team wants to do. But I agree with you that it feels like dime is something they're going to lean into a little bit here and a little bit more. We know the Bills are a really heavy nickel team, which also, by the way, goes to the discussion you guys are having, the larger discussion about the league. The league has gone pretty much mostly nickel anyway. Some teams are playing a lot more dime. It feels like the Bills might need to do that, might want to do that here going forward over, you know, especially with the losses they have at linebacker.
That's what I want to ask you about, Sal, like a bigger picture conversation. You know, I brought up in the first hour the idea of Major League Baseball's shift and the NHL's neutral zone trap, where a defensive system is employed to limit big plays or to limit explosive plays. And that's what the NFL we're seeing, right? We're seeing defenses subscribe to the idea that explosives are bad. And if we just limit your explosives, we like our chances. That brings down scoring. That brings down explosive. What I think we're seeing is some version of, and again, it's not, it doesn't line up perfectly, but I mentioned the Bills-Chiefs game during the pandemic where the Bills invited the Chiefs to run.
Yes.
Right? The whole league seems to be doing that. They're giving looks on purpose, inviting the run. It's not, yes, the run is an important part of what's happening, but teams are running into run looks because that's what the defenses want. And, you know, like I said, like the shift in the neutral zone trap, those are dirty words to some degree. I wonder what you feel about that. Like if the NFL looks at this and says like, okay, the offenses are going to have to find an answer because the league is not going to want explosive plays and touchdowns to be down long term, right? I mean, they can maneuver the levers. They can get things the way they want them. And if this is a neutral zone trap level event, it's a big deal.
Well, I mean, you're getting into some stuff of like what the league kind of wants to do to get it. And you're not wrong. I will tell you, I was on a conference call. I was listening to a conference call. Every year, the NFL has a conference call before the season to go over a lot of different data. And one of the things that stood out to me before this season, Jeremy, was one of the NFL executives was talking about scoring average per game and how a few years ago it got like to a point where it was too high. And then it came down, and now it was kind of like last year a little bit more in line with where they like it. And it just noted that, right? I thought to myself, interesting that the league is saying, hey, we like the scoring at this particular spot, right, where it is. And I think it's kind of right where they like it now through a few games. It might be a little bit lower than they want. So you're right. Maybe at some point they start to change things. But look, this just goes back to something I've talked about for many years. And I remember being on a show with the Bulldog, and we had a big discussion about this maybe 10 years ago. And I would say football is just cyclical. It's what happens. It's what happens in this game. It's what happens in this league. You have a response by the offense to everything the defense is doing. And guess what? At some point, the defense is going to say, I'm tired of getting eaten up by 6 yards of carry now. I'm going to put bigger people on the field to stop that. And then offense is going to say, well, then we're going to throw it on you again. And it may take a few years for all of this to happen because let's think about roster building. Let's think about the vision of how you want to construct what you're doing to put those guys on the field. It's not just schematics. That's a big part of it. X's and O's. You have to have the players and the personnel to do it. And you have to have the roster construction to be able to do it. And right now, rosters are constructed exactly like that. At smaller athletic players on defense, which translates to, okay, I'm going to go a little bit bigger on offense. I'm going to use an extra offensive lineman. The Bills did this. The Chiefs ran three tight ends against the Bills in the playoff game last year. The Bills did not. They had no answer because as good as Taron Johnson is, they're playing nickel the whole game. Right? I mean, it's a tough situation to be in, but this is what's happening. It's a chess match, and it's cyclical around the league.
But I wonder, you know, as you say, teams will get tired of getting run on. I wonder how true that is, Sal, because if I'm a defensive coordinator, right, I'm a defensive coach, and yeah, I'm tired of it, but if overall my scores are down, I'm happy. Yeah. I've still done my job. You know, you ran for 150 yards, and I got gashed on the ground. How many points do you have? 21. You know, it's not the days of 35-31. If the league trends lower towards these lower scores, I just think that there's a bit of an accepting from defenses that running the ball yields less. And if I'm just looking to shut the game down, all right, I'm limiting possessions, I'm limiting it all. You could certainly be right about the cycle, but man, if you're just a defensive mind, I think you still like this cycle no matter what, because if I get run on, so be it. You're not going to blow me out running the ball.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think that's the way teams are probably looking at it. Hey, if you only score 17 on me, why do I care if you have 400 yards or 200 rushing? Right, it doesn't really matter overall. I said this in the offseason. I don't know if you guys remember, we had this big discussion about just some what was happening with free agency. I think we had a big clue that the league was going this way really en masse, which was the safety position really changed this offseason, right? I mean, teams just, how much dead money was there with the safety position? Remember, everybody's just getting rid of all their safeties and all these high-priced guys. And even at that time, I said, you know what's happening is teams don't need to pay one guy to go be a freak athlete in the middle of the field to shut down these high-powered offenses and go get the ball. They're saying, you know what? We're just going to put two guys out there who are very coachable, understand what to do, keep everything in front of them. They don't have to make wild plays. They just have to – we're going to pay two guys to split the field and say, go do your job. And that's what's happening, which, by the way, that's actually why, like – When Bills fans are a little bit, DeMar Hamlin, this is DeMar Hamlin's game. Like, this is what he does. DeMar Hamlin is like the perfect kind of safety for this. He's not Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde, especially Micah, to go get a ball that Mac Jones throws, and you're like, oh my God, how did he intercept that? Like, DeMar Hamlin is, I'm going to put you back there. You're going to keep everything in front of you. You don't have to make plays on the ball all the time. Just make sure that you make tackles, you're physical, and you do exactly what you're coached. And that's exactly what he's doing.
And, you know, as you mentioned, Hamlin, Sal, I've got this the chart up. I've got a website. You can make the whole chart, and I'll just boil it down. What I'm getting at is Sean McDermott and his staff deserve a lot of credit, because if you want to talk about being ahead of the curve, this has been their defense the whole time. The league is going to this. The league is going to the Bills, Sean McDermott, limit explosive plays in the passing game offense. It's what they've been doing the whole time.
Yeah, and I'll say too, and you're right, Jeremy. They've done this because they were one of the first teams to go kind of strictly nickel. Now, it helps when you have Taron Johnson, right? Most teams don't have a Taron Johnson to be able to do that. But really, if you look back since Taron Johnson's time here in Buffalo, teams 5 years ago weren't always going exclusively nickel. The Bills were one of the first teams to do that. Some teams were trending that way. I mean, the Bills had a nickel coach. Remember that? They don't really have one now, but they actually literally had a guy who was dedicated to literally just coaching that one position because it was such a key position and because the Bills felt they could do that. And I'll say on the other side, the Bills have kind of wanted to do what we're talking about on offense under Sean McDermott too, right, for a while, which is, hey, yes, we have Josh Allen, and you need to pass the ball to win and throw the ball. I'm not telling you he wants to be ground and pound. That's not it. And I've always pushed back, and Sean McDermott has said that. But I think he's always wanted a physical element to the Bills' offense that they can turn to when defenses do what they're doing now.
Yeah.
And I think that was why they signed Damian Harris last year, but then he got hurt. And I think that's kind of also lending to why the Bills are able to do what they're able to do the first 2 weeks by leaning on the run game a little bit. They've kind of built their roster to have this response.
Yeah, it's funny. I love this conversation. I want to go one step further on it. That said, what would the Bills do if a team did that to them? They would stay in nickel, right? Like, this gets me back to when the Bills drafted Dalton Kincaid, and they said, look, we're going to get teams with a linebacker on him. Like, well, if you're playing against Dalton Kincaid, you wouldn't do that, right? You'd stay in your nickel, and this kind of gets right back to it. I don't disagree, like, what the Bills, their goal, what it is, but if the whole league goes in this direction, I wonder who they can really get out of these looks, because if the entire league goes to, we're willing to let you run, and especially against a Josh Allen team, I feel like the league is going to tell the Bills, run on us. Please run on us in the game theory of it.
Well, can I add to that, Sal? Because, Jeremy, you mentioned even earlier, like, the numbers on who's running better. Running backs so far through 2 weeks are not actually even running better.
Yeah, Kevin Cole had the numbers that running backs are doing the same as they've done in about 5 years. It's quarterbacks running the ball that have yet led to the bigger yields in the running game.
And Sal, I'll pass this to you too. Like, I wonder, maybe the Bills are one of the teams that could get them out of it a little bit if teams don't think they could stop Josh Allen from running the ball when he scrambles or even on the design runs that he does. And this is a question I was going to ask you anyway. Like, I do wonder how good the Bills are as a rushing offense. If you're going to try to get better looks, I think through 2 weeks, especially the Dolphin game, they had the big run by Cook. They looked like their offensive line was having a little bit of an easy time. I do wonder, though, still, like, on what level is the Bills' ground attack? Is it top 10? Is it middle of the pack? Because so far it looks pretty good.
Looks pretty good, and I would say that the other thing the Bills do quite often, they bring in the extra offensive linemen. They want to make sure that they have a size advantage, right? They've kind of utilized that very well over the last couple of years. They're doing it again this year with Alec Anderson. As far as the response and what teams are going to do, I would go back to, guys, if you remember a few years ago, actually, I think in the playoff game against the Ravens, the Bills went base. They played three linebackers. That was a game where they actually did that against the Baltimore Ravens in the playoffs a few years ago because the Ravens had this incredible rushing attack, and the Bills actually took Taron Johnson off the field in that game. They don't do it all the time. I think I remember that same year, it was a pandemic year, I think they did the same thing against Seattle, and Seattle was like running the ball at them, and they went to their response was, okay, we're going to put a third linebacker. It was like halftime they made that adjustment. They're willing to do it. They don't want to do it. Again, last year, the Chiefs, what do you do? The Chiefs put three tight ends in the field, and you're going against Taron Johnson. All right, We're going to take Taron Johnson off. Well, here comes Travis Kelce. We're just going to throw to our tight ends then. I mean, like, that's a tough situation. So I don't know what the response is from other teams. You just have to teams are going to have to pick their poison, and then guys are going to have to make plays. So I do think the Bills' rushing attack is good, but I agree that teams would rather risk letting the Bills do that than letting Josh Allen beat them. Look, the other part of this is I think teams' defenses have also said it's not just about running. It's for every snap I make that offense take, it's one extra time that they can hurt themselves.
Yeah.
So you know what?
Yep.
Instead of them getting on the down the field in two plays, if I make you go six or seven, in one of those you might get a 10-yard penalty, and in one of them you might fumble the ball.
Yep. I love the conversation, Sal. It's super interesting. It's, you know, it's a time in the NFL where this change, you know, we're kind of watching it on a week-to-week basis. All right. What do we miss? Anything? We good?
Yeah, we're good. We have Bills are practicing today at 12:30 p.m. again. First injury report of the week will come out, and then we'll also get the Jags' first injury report.
All right. Sal Capaccio. Thanks, Sal.
You got it, guys.
I think the conversation, Joe, is really interesting. And again, like, if the Bills are a great run team, but but all of a sudden they start playing closer games, who wins? Like, if all we care about is that they win the game. Win the game, win the game. But, I mean, I'm a defensive coordinator. Think about how when the Bills played the Chiefs in the playoff game, they lost that game. Tyler Bass misses a kick. But what was the Chiefs' point total? It was low. You were able to claim a little bit of a victory. Like, guys, they only scored what? They didn't score 31. They didn't score 35. It used to be, for a long time, I think, that if you got run on, it was talked about like it wasn't manly. Like, you got run over. If a team runs for 200 yards on you, it's embarrassing. You got pushed around. A team passes for 200 yards on you, that's nothing. Like, running the ball requires more things to be perfect. A big, huge play in the run game, more blocks need to be perfect than need to be in a passing game, especially with Josh Allen scrambling and throwing down the field and these mobile quarterbacks. So we have a little bit of a landscape 2 weeks in where I want to be a little bit careful about talking about six, not just of the Bills, any team's success in the run game, because I think these defenses want it. Fine. I don't care. What's your yards per carry? I don't care. Whatever your yards per carry was, it's probably lower than your yards per pass if you're a good team. EPA per play. Right now, you know where the Bills are in EPA per play and passing the ball? First.
Are they really?
First. Where are they in running it? Eighth. That's good. I'm a defense. What should we have them do? Well, let's have them do the thing they do eighth best, not first best. You're playing Mahomes. What do you want? Let's have him give the ball to Pacheco as much as we can. Can we ask him to? So it's game theory or however you want to say it. It's really interesting. These defenses, oh, the run is working. Yeah, the defenses would say, like, good. Because if the run's working, you're not passing. And passing is where you're going to get your big explosives. And this is something that the Bills have known and used for 7-8 years.
Yeah.
So it's super interesting.
I also wonder this. I don't think the Bills season's necessarily gone like this because they got behind against Arizona, right? But all that we're talking about makes me wonder if we're going to have fewer comebacks in the league. I know they'll happen here and there, but doesn't it sound like in theory that if both teams are going to come into the game, both defenses are going to come into the game wanting to make the other team run it, and hey, we'll put our safeties in the parking lot and make sure you can't throw the ball down the field on us, and we get out to a 10-point lead in the second quarter. Now you're doing the thing. Now you can't run it.
Well,
the thing we're inviting you to do, you really can't do it because you're going to bleed the game out.
Maybe. I would say I think you might get more comebacks because more games will be close.
Okay. You're right. You'll get...
Think of the Bills when Josh Allen bursts onto the scene and it's Diggs and Beasley and Brown and Sanders and Davis, they're blowing teams away with explosive plays. And now, if teams are going to limit those all the time, I'm just trying to stay close. Falcons-Eagles. The Eagles had no business losing that game.
Yeah.
Kick a field goal. Go ahead. Kick a field goal. All right. One drive, guys. We kept them close on the road. 7 points, touchdown. See you later. If games are close, you'll get your comebacks. And all an offense wants, you just keep us in range. Would you take, I know you wouldn't really take this, 17 games a year where Josh Allen has the ball with 2 minutes left down four? What's the Bills' record? You'd be like, well, I don't know, 12-5? The goal is for the defense, just don't get me out of this game if I've got a good offense. Just keep me in it. And if you're a defense playing against a good offense, that you're same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, well, we got to limit this thing. We got to keep this thing in as close as we can. 803-0550. Great chat with Sal. Enjoy that.
Stinks for fantasy, too, by the way.
Well,
what the heck?
You know, hey, neutral zone trap, the shift. Those things came out of the evolution of the game. The shift was an evolution, and it got to a point where the Major League Baseball said, like, all right, you know what? It's not good for the game.
Mm-hmm.
Let's undo it.
Yep.
So we're far from that in the NFL. Paul Hamilton on the other side, Sabres camp, is open. We'll see what the update is, if we've got any inclination on Dahlin and how things look, how Lindy ran his first practice with the team in quite a long time, the new version of Lindy Ruff. Paul, next.
It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, it's the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People will ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
He's back, Mr. Paul Hamilton. You got to go to a hockey rink yesterday, Paul. That's good news, right?
And not that awesome.
You'd been there at prospects challenges and things like that, but an honest-to-goodness training camp.
Yeah, it was great to be there. You know me, when hockey starts, I'm ready to go.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's been a long wait for this this hockey season. So training camp's underway, and that's exciting, right? Lindy Ruff. There you go, Paul. Compare Lindy Ruff's last practice to this one. It's been a while. Is he just as loud? Is he just as demanding? Is he, you know, what's different? We're hearing a lot that people change over the course of years, and I think a lot of people do. So his coaching style might be different, but what about practice style for those that have known Lindy?
I think it might have even been a little bit more demanding than what I had seen before, because that's what these players are asking for, you know, and when they went off sides, practice got stopped, and we did it again. And when there was, as he said, he can't stand, he hates these ticky-tacky penalties, lazy penalties, you know, people getting their stick out to stop somebody when they could just keep skating and stop them, and he stopped practices for that too. Because, you know, he doesn't want to see that. And as you know, he has a term now that he didn't used to use, non-negotiables. And if you're in a game and you don't back check, or you're not competing, you're not playing. It's as simple as that. But these guys were tired. He did say he was pleased with them, though. You know, he said it was he challenged them. It was a challenging practice, he said, but they went hard. And he thought he got everything he could out of them yesterday. He liked the way the players approached practice, and he liked what he got out of them.
How do you think the players' group chat was after? Like, that was pretty intense. I mean, you know, Paul, a lot of people, when I think it was when Mittelstadt left, he commented about the Avalanche practice, and people looked at that as a statement about how mm-hmm. the Sabres would practice, the intensity there, whatever it might be. Is this a definite difference in how practices have been the last 2 years, 5 years, 7 years? It's one practice in, and he said he wanted to get that as a message out there about what he's going to demand from them. But is it a difference if you're down there, just as any observer, over the last few years?
Well, Ralph Kruger might as well not have practiced. I mean, the practices Ralph Kruger ran were a joke, and the team was out of shape, and it drove me crazy watching his practices. So Granato shows up, and he sees that they're out of shape and everything. For a week, he basically skated the heck out of them, and really practices were like night and day, you know, watching that. But, you know, that seemed to go away after a while, too. You know, it wasn't quite as crisp. It wasn't quite as, you know, I'd seen him stop practices because that's bothered me. I can't tell you for how long. We can go back five or six coaches where I'm sitting there watching the team, Bielsma. I'm sitting there watching the team go offside and practice. I'm going, why is this okay? That, you know, they don't care. They don't straddle the line. They go offside. And then they wonder why they don't win hockey games. Because to me, it leaks over into your games when you do stuff like that. And, you know, Granato for a while, he would blow it dead and stop it, and then that went away. So it's definitely different, and it's definitely something players will have to get used to. But, you know, at least in the first day, they seemed to welcome it. I didn't see any complaining, or I saw some tired people out there with their sticks over their knees and them bent over a little bit. But, you know, they didn't seem to be upset or mad or anything else. They just kept working at it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to get to, Paul. Like, one practice in, it might be hard to gauge anyway, but good to hear that. Because I am wondering, you know, they talked at the end of last season like they would have wanted this, but you don't, I guess, really know if you truly want it until you're actually going through it. And whether or not this group will be able to, you know, take practices like that, take an intensity like that, and, you know, still be happy about it, I guess.
Yeah, and it was just the first part, too, where it was the first part of practice they did that, and they had the Zamboni come out and clean the ice, and then they did more systems types of things in the second part of practice. Because don't forget, they have to start that on day one, which they never have. I've never seen a team start the systems on day one, because you have all training camp. Well, all of training camp is 3 days this year. Training camp's over on Friday, basically. Because you have a game on Saturday, you have a game on Monday, and you leave for Germany on Tuesday. And, you know, they'll do training camp type things in Germany, you know, once they get rid of the preseason game that they're playing there. And but still, as far as the training camp as you know it, it's only 3 days. So, yeah, he started systems on day one.
How big an interruption is that, them going to Europe and the timing working out that it's a new coach with, like you just said, like, everything's packed into like 5-6 days. Is it a real tough thing for them to overcome? Do you feel like they'll figure it out and be fine, or is it a real annoyance, I guess?
I think they'll figure it out, and I think it'll be good for them because, you know, it'll just be hockey. There are no distractions. The team can hang out together. Lindy Ruff can, you know, no distractions in Lindy Ruff trying to find out his players and his team. He might do some team building. He's big on that. I remember when he was here before, they'd go curling together, you know, and do things like that. So he might have some of that in mind while they're gone, you know, that he's involved in, not just, well, practice over and the players are going to go out to dinner together or something like that. So it'll be a good, I think, thing for the team to kind of get together, let them figure out what's going to be expected from them. And, you know, just spend a little bit over a week, probably a week and a half together there. And it's going to be work, but I think they'll be able to have some fun too.
Paul Hamilton on Sabres training camp, which is underway. Paul, early looks into the goalie rotation, how they might handle this.
I asked him about that because I said, you know, I know his reputation. And I said, you know, Lukanen, for the first time in his career, played 54 NHL games, handled it extremely well. And, you know, what is your plan? You can't have – if you're going to play Lukanen 55, 60 games, you can't have Levi here, I don't think. I don't think that's enough for him. He's 22. He's got to play. And Lindy said, look, I can't commit to how much a goalie's going to play right now. He goes, you don't know. You don't know how the season's going to go. But he said, yes, Levi's got to play. And he said, in this day and age, you have to have two goaltenders. Now, he wouldn't have said that last time he was here because who were his goaltenders when he coached here last time? Dominic Hasek and Ryan Miller. And that was it. So it was a whole different story back then, but he says now you got to have two goaltenders, which indicates to me maybe he is going to pull Lukanen back from the 54 that he played last year. But I think he also indicated too that, you know, if there's a goaltender going and a goaltender rolling, well, you got to do what give you the best chance to win. And, you know, so if that happens, like Lukanen got him roll last year, well, then my guess is he plays. And then maybe you've got to change things up and send Levi to Rochester so he's playing down there.
What about on the blue line, Paul? Any start indications at the start of who's playing with who? And also, with Dahlin being out there, does that make it tough to tell like who they would have planned on him beginning the season with or who Lindy would have planned on?
It looked like Power because the other ones were Byram, Yoki Haru, Samuelson, Clifton, Bryson Gilbert. So it and Power was seemed like the guy who didn't have a partner. So that's why I say it looked like that he was going to start with Power.
All right. Thanks, Paul.
No problem, guys. Take care.
Paul Hamilton. Find his recaps at WGR550.com as the Sabres, like he said, training camp's quick. It's not, you know, football, like 5 weeks and then a preseason game.
Mm-hmm.
Hockey, show up. There's a game tomorrow.
You know? Yeah.
Sabres and Blue Jackets play on Saturday.
And then they leave for Europe on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Like everything is smashed together for five games. And then a week from tonight, they will play, or a week from tomorrow, they will play Red Bull Munich.
Which will be interesting. It's going to be loud over there in those arenas.
Did you see me call it a must-win game yesterday?
When they play Red Bull Munich? It's not a must-win.
It's a must-win.
It's no.
It's a must-win.
Hold on. It's really no different than if, I know we like to make the college football point, like, oh, if you played Alabama or you play. It's not much different than if Manchester United comes to the U.S. and plays the MLS All-Stars.
Here,
it's not that if they lose, like, oh, okay, they lost.
Two things, though. One, and I'm half kidding when I say this. One, it will be their real team because they have to leave the kids and the Amerk guys here because they have other preseason games in Buffalo.
Right.
So it will be their real team. And it's more a social media point. I don't know if I could take all the snark if the Sabres lose to a team from Germany.
Fair.
That's why it's a must-win game. If they want to avoid being made fun of, then it's a must-win game.
Tune in to WGR 550 each Bills game day during the regular season for your chance to answer our tailgate trivia question presented by Game Day Hospitality. It's your chance to win two VIP tickets to Game Day Hospitality's Red Zone Tailgate Party. Tickets include food, drink, entertainment, and access to the VIP tent. Visit our contest page at WGR550.com.
Boys, that's taken out of the air, but kept in by Weber. Weber takes a shot, the rebound, they score! On the rebound, pops into the net by Tyler Ennis. You want to be a hero? Tyler Ennis is a hero! And the Buffalo Sabres win it in overtime!
All right, what's the date on that? Joe, you got to do it. How many days since the Sabres last playoff winning goal?
Okay, my guess
is it was scored by Tyler Ennis.
My guess is that was April.
You're gonna guess like April 11th,
19th.
Okay,
of 2011. It was good.
April 20th or April 23rd? I'm sorry.
April 23rd of 2011.
Yep.
So how many days ago was that?
April 22nd. Yeah, I got April 22nd for Game 5.
Okay.
April, day since...
I've got April 23rd.
Hockey references, 22nd. Am I looking at... Wait a minute. What's Flyer series do you have open? Make sure it's 2011.
Yeah.
That's 2011?
Yeah. April 23rd.
We don't even know what day it was? This is how long ago. They didn't keep records very well back in the day.
22nd. Now we're at
Howard
the 22nd.
Howard says the 22nd.
Here for the
Friday game because I had to come in and do a Saturday morning show.
There you go. A Saturday morning show after winning?
Yes.
All right. Days since April 22nd, 2011. It has been since the last, that's the last Sabre playoff win also, right?
Yes.
Then not just overtime win. It's been 4,899 days.
Okay. What are the chances? We know the Sabres are removing the mural of all the old players in Alumni Plaza.
Yep.
That they're going to turn that into a days since an overtime, days since a playoff winning goal counter. We're going to low? We don't like that?
You know, I don't necessarily think there's a great chance of that.
We don't know what they're doing. And the team has made no announcement about what could be going in the place of that mural that appears to be coming down. So, could be sponsors, could be anything.
Yeah. It could be just like logos and stuff too, right? Like,
sure.
Could it be nothing?
It'll be a big arrow that says "This way to the new Jumbotron." I do want to see the new. I'm excited to see that. People can see that on Saturday.
The pictures yesterday, it's like extended beyond the blue lines, like barely, or it's at least blue line to blue line.
But
like,
it's huge. It's very big. All right, 803-0550. Howard picks the Bills when we get back. Jeremy and Joe, chatting Bills, Jaguars, chatting NFL strategy, chess match stuff about what defenses are doing as well. So we'll keep doing that. And I got to tell you about the new golf game I learned.
Yes, I'm excited to hear about this.
Playing golf for 30 years, never played this game before, loved it. We'll get to that as well.